Hi, my name's Thomas Handley. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 21st, 2001. The Midtown Group is my home group. And first of all, I'd like to thank Billy for asking me to come out and speak. It's a real honor and privilege to do anything I'm asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you particularly have been very good to our group. I've heard your experience at our meeting. And anyhow, it's good to be here tonight. And I was telling Billy beforehand, I've never spoken for an hour, spoken for a half hour, plenty of times. And I've always run out of time with half an hour. So I'm hoping that it balances out and I, you know, don't do the same thing I usually do with a half hour here. But we'll see what happens. But, you know, I talked to my sponsor. I tried to call him earlier today, but I got in touch with him yesterday. You know, just to kind of touch base, because he's really the person who's made me feel grounded here. Like, he's the one I really feel I have the deepest connection with of anyone. And, you know, just ask him, you know, what should I do? What should I talk about? I mean, obviously, it's my story. He can't tell me what to say, what my story is. But he's always been a good example for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, he has taught me to show up, taught me to do things that, you know, didn't seem like they were going to do anything for me. Didn't seem like things I was interested in doing. He taught me things like wear a tie when I go speak somewhere, and you know, put on a good image of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, show, you know, what this program has done for me. Because I, you know, I'm someone who couldn't show up for anything, couldn't get out of bed, couldn't just could not live up to my commitments. And I'd make plenty of commitments, plenty of promises, plenty of ideas of how I'm going to improve my life and change my life, and really before I came here, none of that stuff worked out for me. And anyhow, I'm going to, you know, tell you in general what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like today, because that's what the book tells us to do. And I'm someone who grew up in a pretty normal family, really. I could not have wished for a better family circumstance to grow up in. Like, I had very loving parents, you know, a brother who I didn't really get along with, but I feel like most people who have brothers who are older don't really get along that well. And, you know, plenty of, like, play friends and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, I didn't want for anything. And there's definitely nothing I can look back in my life and put a finger on it and say, like, that's it. That's why I'm an alcoholic. That's what did it. And, you know, I understand some people have a different background, but certainly for me, that's not true. Like, I don't know why I'm an alcoholic or what caused me to become an alcoholic, or if I was born with it, or any of that kind of stuff. And honestly, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it anymore. I used to try and figure it out. But my sponsor taught me that, you know, what does it matter? I'm here and this works for me. And I feel very fortunate that I've discovered that. Because I'm, you know, I'm someone who came here feeling there was no solution. You know, just to give you a quick preview of what I was like when I came here, I was completely hopeless, completely desperate, and you know, it really felt like I hadn't set out to make my life into a disaster. I hadn't set out, you know, hoping to be a disappointment to my parents and to not be able to show up for things and to not be able to complete school like I wanted to and not show up for my commitments and be a letdown to all my friends, to my girlfriend, to have no sense of inner peace or serenity or anything, you know, even the things I didn't know that I wanted. And, you know, I tried everything I could to get by in life, to feel some sort of sense of normalcy, and nothing really worked for me until I came here. And I feel very fortunate standing in these rooms today that there's a solution for me here. Because I, you know, I know plenty of people. Like, my path wound its way through psych wards and various institutions, and I met some people who I later met outside of those institutions who were still doing the same thing, who were still drinking, who were still on 5 or 6 psychiatric meds, and who still had no answer, you know, really no hope for things getting better. Who, you know, I remember I met this guy one day. I'd been sober maybe 3 years, and I met him at school. And there was that sense of recognition, but I couldn't really place it. And he said, Thomas, right? Tom, I know you. The psych ward. I met you in the psych ward like 3 years ago. which was a little strange, but I mean, at that point, I did recognize him. And so, he asked what was going on. I'm like, things are great, I got my life kind of back together. I feel like I'm back on track. I'm sober 3 years now. I'm in school again. I'm able to show up. Like, I have a job that I can hold down. And, asked what was going on with him, and he said, well, pretty much the same as it was. I'm still on 5 or 6 meds. I have to go to the psychiatrist's office 3 times a week. I've been in the psych ward average of 1 month every year. I don't know what he had or what his problem really was, but I know that for me, alcoholism fit the bill, and nothing felt like it did before I got here. But anyhow, to go back to what it was like, like I said, I grew up in a pretty normal family, but I never felt normal growing up. Like, I always felt like the exception. Like, I just didn't fit in anywhere. I felt uncomfortable. I felt, as the book describes it, restless, irritable, and discontented. I never felt like I could just do what everyone else was doing. Even from my very earliest memories as a child, I'd see everyone playing and having fun and just talking and laughing and all this stuff. And I would do the same things. I could try and mimic what they were doing. But I never felt inside like I was getting what they were getting. Like, I never felt that sense of camaraderie or anything. And not to say I had no friends or anything like that. Like, I was actually a pretty good outgoing kid. Like, I had friends, but I always felt like something was missing. Like, I didn't have that. If there was like some sort of instruction manual or something I hadn't received on day one, I don't know. But, and honestly, I always assumed that everyone felt that way. I assumed everyone put on their best image and just pretended like they knew what was going on and tried to fit in as best they could. And to a certain extent, that's probably true. But I did not know that the extent to my irritability and the extent of my uncomfortability and just feeling like I wasn't like everyone else was definitely not normal. And it came out more and more as I got older. As I progressed in school, I started having some just social problems, like with, misbehaving, because I didn't feel like I understood what was going on. And they put me in special classes. That makes you feel good about yourself. I went from being in the gifted talented program because they said I wasn't, maybe they're not challenging me enough. Maybe that's the problem. And that didn't work, so they put me in, like, the learning disabled program, thinking maybe that's it. And they couldn't figure it out. And the truth was, like, I just, I wasn't interested in school. Like, I always felt like I just wanted to, I just wanted to feel like I fit in and feel like I was doing what everyone else was doing and, feel comfortable in my own skin, which is something I never had. And I remember from a very young age, like, trying different things to try and feel like I fit in. Like, I went in the Cub Scouts and I went in the Boy Scouts. My parents kind of pushed me in directions like that, thinking, a lot of my friends were doing that. Maybe that'll be it for me. Maybe I'll feel like I fit in there. And that didn't work. And I tried, I tried not going to church. I tried that for a long time. And that didn't seem to work. So I thought, maybe I'll go to church. My parents weren't especially religious, so they let me make my own decision on that. And I tried going with them and going with some friends, and it seemed, I could definitely see that people were getting something out of that. Like, I would see people walk out of that room with the light in their eyes that was different from when they came in. And I felt exactly the same. I felt like nothing had happened. It went in and it went out. I didn't absorb anything. And I tried hanging out with the cool kids at school and trying to do that, and I never really fit in. That definitely wasn't my strong point. But, tried misbehaving and not doing well in school intentionally to try and fit in with those kids, and that didn't make me feel any better. So I tried, like, really applying myself and being a good student and making my parents proud. And just nothing I tried seemed to work. And I remember my brother came home one night. I was maybe like 11 or 12 years old. Hadn't started drinking yet. I'd had a couple sips of beer and wine here and there, but nothing to really feel an effect. My brother came home completely drunk, just wasted, disgusting. In the middle of the night, my parents weren't home. They were out for the weekend. And to my knowledge, that was the first time and the last time he ever did anything like that. But he came home. He stumbled around the house. I didn't know what was wrong with him. He passed out in the bathroom, threw up on himself, peed on the floor. It was not attractive. You know what I mean? Like, I thought from that point on, like, well, if this is what getting drunk is about, like, I definitely don't want to do that. And I really didn't understand, like, going through, you know, the first couple years of high school, like, people talk about, oh, let's go get drunk, it's going to be great, we're going to have fun. To me, that was what getting drunk was. I thought that was it. And I had no idea what people feel like when it happens. But it just looked disgusting to me. And so I avoided it. Like, I'd take a little sip. I'd go to parties and sip a little here and there. And it looked like people were having a good time, and I didn't understand how that was happening. But I was very careful to avoid it. And I got involved in some other substances, which really have very little to do with my story here in AA. But it was the first things I got involved in. And I finished high school having never really had the experience of getting drunk, of having that sort of release, which I think is very unusual, especially for the home group I come from, where a lot of people are like 17, 16 even, getting sober. But I finished high school. I went to college for a year. And I got accepted at Virginia Tech, which was like my dream school. It's where I always wanted to go. And I was too scared to go. Like, when the time came, I couldn't do it. I couldn't leave home. Like, I felt, I felt paralyzed by shyness and, like, feeling like, well, if I don't fit in there, you know, I won't have anywhere I can fall back on. My friends are all here. But, like, my friends were all going to the community college because they hadn't done very well in school. And so I figured, well, I'll just do that. I'll just go to the community college. So I did that for a year and did really well. Had no problems with it, but continued to feel the way I've been feeling. And it got to the point where I felt like there's got to be something more, man. I mean, there's got to be something better than this. And one day an Army recruiter called me, talked to me about the Army and how great it's going to be if you join the Army. And of course I knew he was trying to sell me on an idea, but I was sold before I picked up the phone. Like, I got the idea in my head, like, maybe that's it. Maybe I just need some discipline, Like, all my life I've needed something, and I haven't found it yet, so maybe this is it. And so, I went there. I didn't tell my parents anything about it. I went there, signed the paperwork, went back 2 weeks later and went and swore in, gave my oath, got my medical examinations, all that. Because I was 18, I could do what I wanted. That's what I felt like. And, I knew my parents had some misgivings about military service in one way or another, that they'd want to talk it over with me before I did it, certainly. And so, just to dodge the issue, I just didn't talk it over at all. I just figured I'll just join, and then they can't be upset. And I was supposed to ship off for boot camp in 4 months, and I spent the next 4 months kind of buttering my parents up to the idea of why it's a great idea for me to join the Army. And I'd bring it up every week, like, well, I was reading this thing about money for college. I think it would be really helpful. I think, I'll get a lot of sense of having grown up, like, maybe this will make me a man or something. And finally, when I told them I was joining, it was like a week before I was going off to boot camp. I came back from having joined the Army, and told them, like, all right, next week I have to leave. And they were a little shocked by that. And really, that's how I was. Like, I was so self-centered. Like, I didn't consider at all, like, what anyone else would have thought or what anyone else felt about anything. I was constantly worried what you were thinking about me, but I wasn't worried about hurting your feelings or, what if I don't treat you right, or what's the right way to be a son, or what's the good thing to do in this situation. Like, I just wasn't interested in that. I just wanted to get what I wanted to get, and I didn't care about anyone else. And I went to the Army, and I found out that I didn't get anything that I thought I was going to get. I felt like the same guy who didn't fit in. I had some friends, and the very first weekend we were allowed to go out, it was big excitement. I mean, it was like we'd been almost 2 months without, or no, it was over 2 months. This was after boot camp. With no drinking, no cigarettes, no women, nothing, unless you snuck something in there on the side. And everyone was really excited about it. We got a hotel, like, just took over, like, a whole wing of this hotel. And it was like a wonderland, an alcoholic wonderland. Like, you'd walk you could walk into any room and there's like, you know, they have beer and vodka in this room. They have hard apple cider in this room. They have some Jack Daniels here. They have Jim Beam over here. You know, like pick whatever you want. And as long as you brought something to the party, you could drink anyone's stuff. And you know, still to this point, I had never really gotten drunk. And that was the first night it really hit me. And I remember I was in a room where they were serving screwdrivers. And you know, the guy poured the first drink. He poured it like a quarter full of vodka and three quarters full of OJ. And I drank it. And, you know, I was like, what's the big deal? You know, what's the big deal? I feel the same. It kind of burned. It tasted all right. And like 30 seconds later, like something hit me. And it was like the moment I've been waiting for my whole life. Like it was just like, you know, it describes it in the book as a complete psychic change, which is supposed to be what happens to us when we go through the 12 steps and have a spiritual awakening. But I had a psychic change right there, right then and there. It was instantaneous, and I wouldn't say it was complete because it only lasted until my next drink. But my whole way of thinking and my whole way of being shifted right there. And I felt immediately like all the things I've been worrying about, like all these things, like, what is she thinking of me right now? You know, I'd like to talk to her, but I'm too afraid. What's that guy thinking about? Like, you know, I don't feel like I fit in with these people. What are we going to do later? Like, all that thinking just stopped. And I just felt like I could be. I felt like I started to feel like this is what I've been missing out on my whole life. Like, I can't believe people have been drinking for like the last 8 years of high school and all this stuff. Like, I'd heard people talk about going out, getting drunk, and this is what I've been missing. Like, I really felt like I wasted my adolescence, like, not drinking. And, you know, and, like, all that happened in, like, a second, and the rest of the night just felt like the most fun I'd ever had anywhere. But we didn't do anything. We walked around. We stumbled down a sidewalk. Someone almost fell into the road. And you know, it seemed funny at the time, and it seemed like we were walking on a slant, and you couldn't quite straighten up all the way. And we went to a Taco Bell and got some food, and it seemed like a great time, you know, like just hanging out with the fellas, like feeling like you fit in, and gave this girl a massage when I got back, like no fear about talking to her or anything. And I, you know, I just absolutely felt like this is it. You know, this is it for me. I don't need anything else. I can just do this from now on. And I, you know, I don't know if the thought was that clear, but I definitely felt like I'm going to do this as soon as I can. Like, I can't believe I haven't done this before. And I remember pouring my second drink, like from the same room. There was no one pouring drinks anymore because everyone already had a couple. And I intuitively poured that one like 7/8, maybe 9/10 full of vodka and just like a little touch of orange juice to color it. So I was like, well, I mean, why do you want to put orange juice in it? Like, I've had orange juice plenty of times, and I know that's not doing anything for me. So I want the good stuff. And my drinking really progressed like that. I went into, I think that very first, no, it wasn't that night, but the very next weekend we went out, and I started drinking. Like, I was excited all week about that weekend, like knowing it was coming up. I was going to get that feeling of release again, like that, you know, just letting the spring untighten for the first time. And I felt like the weeks going by became bearable because I had that to look forward to. And the very second weekend, I just took off drinking. As soon as we had access to it, as soon as we found someone who was old enough to buy it from the liquor store, you know, I had my order in, and I didn't even know what half these things tasted like, but I was like, well, I want vodka, I want some Jim Beam, I want some Jack Daniels, I want some 151, and goddamn what it cost. Like, I didn't care about cost. You know, I was earning money and not spending it, so I felt like, who cares about this college money thing, you know, like, I can figure that out later. So right now what's important is getting drunk. And anyhow, you know, I ended up going into a blackout the second night. I had no idea what was going on. Drank just a ridiculous quantity of alcohol from the stories I've heard. And I had what was called fire guard duty that night, where you're supposed to be back in the barracks to keep a watch over everything, make sure, you know, there's no fire, really to clean the toilets. That's what it really entails for the most part. And it was like it's 6:30 or 5:30 a.m., something crazy like that. And somehow I was still awake, I guess. So I'd never, you know, we'd never gone to sleep. And I guess I was in this blackout insisting to my buddies I have to get back for fire guard. And, you know, that certainly wasn't characteristic of my drinking, that I insisted to get back from my responsibilities. But for some reason that night it happened. And I remember coming out of that blackout in the barracks. I was in the bathroom, in a stall actually, huddled over a toilet, on my hands and knees. And there was vomit all over the place. My first thought was someone really missed the mark there. I mean, that's disgusting. And I kind of got up and backed away from it. And I was like, just shaking my head. Like, I don't know what happened here, but that's really gross. And there were like two of my buddies at the doorway, and they said, you better clean that up before the drill sergeant gets here. I was like, why should I clean it up? Whoever did it should clean it up. I mean, that's stupid. And, just with no awareness I didn't even know what had happened in the last couple hours. And, I had a blackout most times I drank. And really the reason was because I'm exactly what describes in the book. Like, I'm someone who, from the time I ingest alcohol, I do not know and I cannot control what's going to happen to me. I cannot control the quantity I take in. And it took me a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous to really feel like alcoholism fit for me. I didn't come here feeling like I was an alcoholic. Like, I felt like alcohol worked for me. There was no question of that. But, I really didn't understand because I'd never really tried to quit. Like, alcohol did something for me that was worth any consequence. And none of them had gotten bad enough or had gotten to the point that I was willing to try and quit. I tried quitting other things. I quit various other substances I was doing, thinking they were the problem. I quit various social activities. I quit school. I quit going to work. Quit doing a lot of things. But I was not interested in quitting drinking because that was the one thing that made me, that's what made me feel normal, you know. Like, it talks about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in there. And, I can't tell you which time I was Dr. Jekyll and which time I was Mr. Hyde. But, I felt, when I was drunk, I felt like this is how I'm supposed to be. Like, I think I was born with an alcohol deficiency. And I just need a little alcohol to feel like I'm normal. And, of course, there were plenty of times I acted goofy and did things I didn't mean to do and got in blackouts and did all these things. And all the time thinking, I'm a great guy when I drink. If I just drink a little alcohol, I can be a great guy, great social talker, great person to hang around and party with. With no idea what it was really like to be around me, that it was pretty unbearable from what I hear. I can look back on my drinking today, and there's plenty of examples of time. Like, I can't think of a single time where I took a drink and just stopped. And actually, we were recently in a restaurant and coming back from the airport, and these people got up and left their table, and there was a half glass of beer. Mm-hmm. It was like one of the real tall ones. And I was just saying, I mean, he paid for it, for one thing. But how can you just leave a half glass of beer? I mean, there's magic in there, you know? And, I got to thinking, there's not a single example I can think of in my drinking where, unless something happened where I dropped it or the cops came or something, where I intentionally got up and walked away from a drink of alcohol. And, there's plenty of other things that I suppose would qualify me for these rooms, and not everyone has that particular experience, but for someone like me who came here not feeling like I fit in, there's plenty of evidence when I really look at my story. And I got finished with my training in the Army and came back, and most of my friends had moved out of the area, and I started drinking more and more by myself. I wasn't old enough to go to bars. I'd found out that by a freak coincidence, the age on my military ID, my authentic military ID, had the wrong age on it. And it said I was already 21. I was only like 19. I remember actually we were in this processing weekend where they were reviewing all of our paperwork and all of our files, making sure everything was accurate. And like when it got to that time to review your ID card, make sure everything was accurate, I was looking at it. I never noticed that it had the wrong date on it. And I told my buddy, like, hey, look, it says I was born in, you know, 1975. What's this about? And he was like, that says you're 21, man. Why would you tell him about that? And, you know, so I got a lot of good drinking out of that ID. And because no one questioned a real military ID when I went, especially when I went to the military liquor store. And, you know, I came back with the same feeling I'd always had. And, like, the moments of release when I was drinking were great, but it was, like, more and more, I couldn't bear to handle just showing up for life, just doing the normal, everyday things that people do. And it had gone from the, you know, originally I just felt uncomfortable and felt like I didn't really fit in. But I could do it. I could show up. I could do what people were doing. But I really stopped maturing in any way, shape, or form when I started drinking. Because every time I had a problem from that point on, I would turn to alcohol. Because I knew it solved it. Solved it a lot quicker than going through it. Or, you know, going through pain and getting through it on the other side. Or whatever the problem was. And, you know, I didn't have a lot. Like, I was still living at home. I was back in school. And I think I made it, like, a year in school after I'd gotten back from the military. I'd convinced my parents that it was all right for me to drink at home. Because there was a saying that if you're old enough to die for your country, you're old enough to drink. And it seemed reasonable to them, but they had no idea what quantities I was talking about. Like, they thought it was like a beer here and there with dinner, or maybe a little rum and Coke or something. But I would, you know, often fill up a glass of rum with a little Coke on top and drink that with the family dinner, you know, just with everyone else. Or a favorite was I'd have a... My parents would sometimes put a little Kahlua on top of ice cream because it just... To them, it went well. It had a good flavor, you know, and I wasn't interested in flavor at all. But I, you know, I saw that. So I'd make this kind of soup concoction. It was like one little teeny scoop of ice cream with like a big bowl full of Kahlua with kind of like a soup spoon. And I thought that was normal. I mean, my parents did it. So I thought, you know, I never looked at my drinking and thought, like, this is abnormal. I got to cut this out. This is not how everyone else drinks. And, you know, I knew enough not to do that in front of my parents. Like, I would limit my drinking in front of them. Because I knew I drank more than most people drank, most people my age, certainly. I suppose there are plenty of warning signs, plenty of little flags popping up here and there. You know, that things were not normal for me, that things were pretty messed up, actually. But, you know, I ignored all that stuff. And I drank whenever I could to get rid of that feeling. And, you know, I continued to drink that way. It got to the point where I remember I was in summer classes, the summer of 1998. I had signed up for drawing because I wanted to take painting eventually and a Spanish class. I'd taken like 8 years of college level, or no, 8 years of high school Spanish plus college Spanish, plus like I'd lived in Panama when I was a kid for 1 year. And I was, you know, reasonably fluent. And, you know, first, the Spanish class went first because it got to the point where I was just so stirred up, so scrambled in the head. Like, I couldn't think straight anymore. I could barely process a sentence in English, much less in Spanish. And, you know, it went from feeling comfortable being able to speak Spanish to not being able to answer the simplest question in Spanish, like, ¿cómo estás? Like, I just couldn't process it. It seemed like too much. It was very demanding. Very demanding. I mean, summer class, they want a lot out of you, and it had always been my dream to study abroad and go to Spain. It was something my parents wanted me to do, and my mom had gotten a lot out of that experience. And I had signed up to do it. I paid, like, the registration fee or whatever, or I should say my parents had paid it. And there was no thought of that. Like, I dropped the class because it seemed too demanding. And the only other class I was in that summer was drawing. And that went pretty quick, too, because I was shaking like a leaf. I mean, I didn't know what was going on. My body just seemed like it was beginning to fall apart. I didn't relate it to my drinking at all. I would tell people that I had bad nerves. Like, if they questioned, I would avoid eating things like peas and corn off the cob because it couldn't be done. Soup was difficult. And, you know, and I, I remember going through high school, there was like, my high school biology class, there was this DNA electrophoresis thing we were supposed to do, where it was like, there was like this little gel thing, and you had, it was like very precise, you had to have very good like muscular control, and be able to put this dye like in this exact little tiny well. Kind of like that game, Operation game, where if you touch the side it would buzz. You had to like be real precise with it. And I had been selected by the whole class as the most steady-handed guy in the class to do this for the class, like for the class experiment. And then, like, you know, 6 years later or something, I'm just telling people, like, well, I have bad nerves. I don't know what it is. I just got bad nerves. I figured it was a family trait or something. I don't know where I got that idea. But, you know, never related it to my alcoholism or to my drinking. And I didn't even know what the DTs were. But I knew when I drank, it seemed to go away. It seemed to still things a little bit. So I started drinking in the morning more and more. And I'm glad I never read that those 12 questions or whatever about, you know, you might be an alcoholic, and it has like all these questions. And I mean, there's a lot of them I qualified for, but there, one of them says, did you ever drink in the morning? And when I first read that, I thought, like, well, sure. I mean, who didn't drink in the morning? Come on. It's the best time of day to get started. I mean, to get yourself going in the morning, get a little motivation, feel like you can show up for the day. Best way to get over a hangover? I mean, come on. And, you know, that became part of my normal routine, was to drink in the morning. And I dropped that drawing class because the shaking problem had gotten pretty bad. It was really humiliating. If I couldn't even draw a circle or a square, anything legible. You know, I tried to do these abstract pictures because that's all I could handle with the shaking. And the teacher told me, that's not the assignment. Let's just keep to the assignment. So I dropped it. It was too much. And so, you know, here I am, like 20 years old. You know, I dropped my two classes. I quit showing up for work because I just couldn't show up anymore. And really had nothing going for me. Like every opportunity I'd had, I'd wasted, I'd blown it. And the girl I was dating at the time broke up with me. And I felt like, I mean, what's going on? This is it. This is the last straw. And really she was like the last thing I'd really held on to. It's like, she can fix me. This is it. You know, I just need the right girl. She can fix me. And, you know, I had all these ideas in my head that, you know, we'll get married someday and that'll be it and that'll fix me, that'll fix everything. And, you know, of course, had no interest in maintaining the relationship here today or putting anything into it. I mean, that's a lot of work. And so she left and I, you know, I really had nothing left. I had no friends left, no relationship with my friends. I'd gotten involved in some pretty bad substances. And it wasn't, you know, honestly, I didn't really get that much out of that stuff. I definitely didn't get the feeling I got when I drank. But I just didn't care anymore. I really wanted it to all just to end. I felt like if this is life, if this is it, it's not worth it. It's not worth living. And, you know, I started just taking a lot of risks. Wherever there was a risk I could take, I would. You know, and hoping, like, maybe I won't wake up tomorrow. Maybe it'll just end. And, you know, never really took an action specifically at trying to end my life, but, you know, I'd do some dramatic things here and there. But, you know, I degenerated pretty quickly, and they didn't know what to do with me. And I had, I didn't know what to do with me. Like, I remember I started seeing a psychiatrist voluntarily because I knew there was stuff going on. Like, I knew I felt depressed. I felt, you know, unhappy with life. Like, I knew things weren't the way they were supposed to be. And I'd read and heard about these antidepressants. And I thought, maybe that's it. Maybe that'll fix me this time. And so I went to a psychiatrist and told him my sad story of, you know, having a privileged childhood. And, you know, I told him everything that I thought I needed to tell him to get what I wanted. And surprisingly enough, he prescribed me antidepressants. And, you know, I started taking that stuff, and it didn't seem like it worked. It did nothing. Like, it made me feel kind of like a zombie going through life, but didn't do much else. And so, you know, he started me on this mixture of, like, I eventually got up to 5 different meds I was taking every day. Like, they got me on an antipsychotic, an antidepressant, a mood stabilizer, a tranquilizer, and something else. I don't even know what the hell it was. I convinced them I had panic anxiety disorder. I think that's what it is, panic attacks. Because I'd read about it on the internet or something, that you get tranquilizers if you have panic attacks. And I thought, well, that can't be a bad deal. So I'd read what a panic attack is like, and I showed up in the psychiatrist's office and told him, Doc, I don't know what's going on with me. You know, I just have these crippling episodes. I don't know what to call it, but I just feel like, there's like a tunnel closing in on me, and I can't operate. And, you know, described exactly the symptoms of a panic attack, the beating heart and all this stuff. And, convinced him, and he gave me a prescription for a tranquilizer. And every time I'd go back, I'd tell him, you know, it helps. It definitely helps. But is there anything stronger? And I don't know if he'd never treated an alcoholic or he knew what was going on the whole time and just, you know, let me walk my own line. I don't know. But he gave me pretty much everything I asked for. And every time I'd go back, I'd get on the next stronger medicine. And, you know, and then he'd double my dose. And I'd go on the next stronger one and, you know, switch, like, between 4 different things until I was on the strongest one that was out there, I guess. And then I would take 3 of them for every time I was supposed to take one, because I figured, well, if one works, I mean, 3 works better. And it was one of those things that had the little sleepy eye symbol on the bottle that said, do not combine with alcohol, effects may be strengthened, or something like that. And that was what I looked for in the medicine, and because that meant my drinking was going to be really great that night. And I would drink every time I took it. And, I was beyond the point of caring if that was abnormal. And I was beyond the point where I wasn't doing that socially. I was by myself. I mean, I was hanging out by myself at this point. I was just sloppy. I couldn't show up anywhere. I was wetting the bed. I was wetting the carpet. Sometimes I'd pass out. I passed out naked in my parents' hallway one time. I don't know what I was doing or why I was naked or why I was in the hallway. I knew sometimes I'd just get drunk and walk around naked. It just seemed like the thing to do. And, like a lot of situations I couldn't really explain. I wasn't someone people wanted to be around, really. And they ended up putting me in the psych ward because it just seemed like nothing was getting through. And rightfully so. And I loved it there. I loved it. It felt like... they would give me all the drugs I wanted. Like, I found out the tranquilizers did almost for me what alcohol did, although it's not quite the same, and alcohol always seemed to work better. But I found out within the first 2 nights of being there that if I stayed up after midnight, the nurse's desk would give me tranquilizers to help me sleep. And I was really sleepy, to be honest, because they had me on all these different meds that just, I mean, they're depressants. They're all depressants. And it was a struggle, but I'd stay up every night. I mean, I made sure I was up at midnight, ready to go up to the nurse's station, like, oh, I'm having trouble sleeping again, yeah. And, and there was no responsibilities. No one expected anything of me. Like, as long as I showed up to art therapy, as long as I showed up to, like, the ping pong table and the group session, and, I felt like I was doing all right. And, I knew most people weren't in the psych ward. I was a little embarrassed about it, but there weren't really a lot of people in my life I cared about at that point. I was beyond the point where I really cared much what happened to me. And, I'd kind of just do crazy things hoping it would make an impact on someone. Like, I started cutting myself in the psych ward and, like, burning myself with cigarettes I wasn't supposed to have that I snuck in there, and telling them it was body art, and just doing a lot of really bad, just kind of nasty stuff to get attention. And, I don't know if I can really describe in words the feeling I had inside, just the feeling of desperation, of just complete disgust at myself, that this is where I ended up. You know, like, my parents did everything they could, and this is what I did. This is, like... I knew every time I turned my back on something, every time I didn't show up where I said I was going to show up, like every time I did something like I shouldn't have done. Like I had that feeling in my gut. Like I knew there was something going on that wasn't what I've been brought up to do. And yet I had no control over it. Like if there was a chance I could drink or if I could, you know, do something that would take that feeling away, I would do it. I had no control over it whatsoever. And you know, I guess I don't need to describe that because most of us wouldn't be here if we'd never felt that. But you know, I was hopeless. I was restless, as we talked about earlier. Like, just didn't feel like there was anything that was going to work for me. And I was transferred from the psych ward to the detox unit because they'd figured out I had a little drug problem, a little alcohol problem. I snuck some alcohol in. I had some friends bring some alcohol into the psych ward, which they frowned upon. And, you know, they found out about all of this stuff. And that was the first time I was separated from, like, all the stuff I'd been doing, all the alcohol I'd been drinking, all the tranquilizers I'd been taking. And it was the most unbearable couple of nights of my life. I mean, and I just remember, like, lying awake, staring. There's, like, a little fire detector on the ceiling, and it was all I could do, just stare at the little red light would flash every 7 seconds or so. And I'd just count the seconds. My thoughts were so scattered. I couldn't seem to complete a thought or a sentence. I couldn't tell anyone what was going on. Or just how terrified I was that this is it. You know, I'm a crazy person. There's no answer for me. This is where I belong. And it's never going to get any better. You know, I definitely did not want to live on that way. And I that was my first exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous. They brought some meetings into that facility. And, you know, I went to the meeting with a bad attitude. We all had to go. There was no option. And they showed us all these videos about what alcohol does to the body, what drugs do to the body. And, you know, if you keep drinking, it's going to cause problems with your liver. And there was this thing, eventually it causes your testicles to shrink or something like that. And I just didn't care. I didn't care. I mean, whatever. It's the only thing that works. Why, you know, there's nothing else out there for me, so I'm going to keep doing it. And just completely hopeless. And I thought I didn't hear anything in the meeting. I thought they didn't have anything to offer me. They came in. They shared their story. It seemed like they had a great life. The two or three leaders I heard. And yeah, I thought, good for you. You know, good for you. I'm glad you found something that works for you. You know, good for you, but I don't have anything. And they transferred me out of there to I had like a rehab aftercare that I was supposed to go to, and I was supposed to quit drinking, but that never set in. So I just quit. You know, I just kept drinking the whole time. But I go there and share in the group sessions and try and help everyone else. They had a lot of problems. So I try and be as helpful as I could. And there are the 12 steps and the 12 traditions on the wall, and they talk a lot about you need to go to AA. Like, if you have a drinking problem, we can't help you. It was actually a very good rehab. They had a good message. They said, we can't solve your drinking problem. We can get you on the right track. But if you want to change, if you want to have a better life, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I read the steps, the traditions on the wall, and I thought, what, 12 steps? That's not going to fix it. You know, especially if I have to share my whole story with someone else, like write down all my defects, all this kind of stuff. No. Make amends to people I've harmed? That's not what I need. I need people who have victimized me my whole life to come back and make amends to me. I wasn't interested in that stuff. And, you know, that was my perception of AA. And, you know, fortunately, I met someone in there who was about my age, who had started going to meetings, who had started to get some time together, and he had some enthusiasm about it. Like, he just told me what it was like for him. Like, he said, hey, I've been going to these meetings. You know, there are a lot of people our age. There's a lot of people older, too, but they really have fun. Like, I remember him saying that. Like, they really have fun. Like, I go out with them Friday night, Saturday night. And he told me some of the stuff they were doing. It sounded like fun to me. It was a lot better than going home and just being miserable. And he told me there were a lot of girls there. And there were not a lot of girls where I was. I was home. I was going home. And I had nothing. In fact, my only social contact at this point was I would I drive to the local shopping mall, and I kept a bottle of alcohol in the glove box. Actually, I kept it in a vitamin bottle so that if anyone looked, it didn't look like alcohol. But I take a swig off this bottle and walk into the mall so I could talk to people. And, just think, like, this is what normal people do, like just going, hanging out, talking to some people. Like, and that was it. That was it for me. And, I went to a meeting with this guy just because he made it sound different from what my experience had been. It sounded like it was interesting. And I went just to see, what could it hurt? And I went just to see what it was all about. And, I remember having the attitude towards a higher power that if there is a God, he's abandoned me. I didn't trouble myself with thinking if there is or if there isn't, but I knew there wasn't a God that was working in my life. Or that's what I thought I knew. And I thought, it couldn't work for me. Even if it's the thing for me, it's not going to work for me because it's got this whole higher power nonsense. And, the first meeting I went to was a book study. They were reading We Agnostics. And, how appropriate for someone like me. And my attention span was maybe 2-3 minutes, maybe 5 minutes tops. And I certainly didn't hear the whole chapter. But I heard just enough. Like what I heard, what I got out of that meeting was maybe there were some people who are like me, who thought the way I thought, who don't think that way anymore. Who have something that works today. And that's really what I saw in the meetings. Like, I saw these people who were happy. Like, they had this energy, they had this light in their eyes. And, you can't fake that. I knew there was something going on. And they said they weren't drinking. They said they were doing all these things. And it was an attractive lifestyle to me. Like, I was completely miserable, completely hopeless. And yet, here's all these people who say they were just like me, who have this energy about them. And just for that and nothing else, I was willing to come back. And I started coming back to meetings because people asked. They said, "What are you doing tomorrow?" And I didn't have a plan. And people started making plans with me. And I'm forever grateful to the fellowship that I fell into here. That I fell into an active group where they really put the newcomer first. And people really went out of their way to make me feel welcome, to ask me what was going on, to make plans with me, to invite me into their lives. And, there were not a lot of places where people were asking me to come back. In fact, nowhere. There was nowhere people were asking me to come back. And, and like I said, like when I got here, I didn't really think I was an alcoholic. Like I began relating to bits and pieces in meetings here and there. I heard people say some stuff that sounded an awful lot like the way I was. I just felt like it's not going to work for me. Nothing. I got my hopes up so many times. I just felt like, maybe it'll be fun for a couple months. But it's not going to work. It's not going to work for me. But I got a sponsor. And, I wasn't interested in getting a sponsor, but everyone kept asking me, just plaguing me with these questions, like, who's your sponsor? Do you have a sponsor yet? Did you call your sponsor today? And, I got a sponsor more than anything else just so they'd shut up, so they quit asking me these questions. And, I had no idea what that meant. I didn't know if he was going to pay me money to do the program or whatever. I'd figured out pretty much that it's not about that. But, I had no idea what it meant to be sponsored and had no interest in finding out. And he gave me a couple of very simple basics, like, why don't you start out by buying a big book and we can read through the doctor's opinion together, and why don't you call me tomorrow? And that seemed like a lot, so I didn't, I just didn't call him. And I started avoiding him in meetings, actually, because it was very uncomfortable. He'd ask me all these personal questions. And, like, one time I remember he asked me to get him some coffee at the meeting. And he was standing outside, and it was this Tuesday night meeting. It was like 3 flights of stairs to where the coffee was. And, I was like poster child shaky newcomer. Like, I was bad. I was shaking. I was sweating. And I went up and got him coffee the way I liked it. with about half a cup full of creamer and 5 or 6 scoops of sugar. And, took it down the 3 flights of stairs, and I had, like, 1 coffee for me, 1 coffee for him, and it was sloshing all over. It was burning my hands. I mean, I'm on the stairs. I'm shaking. And so I bring him this half full cup of coffee with, like, sugar all over the outside of it. And he said, oh, I like black coffee. And I threw it in the bushes, like, freaked out. Because I felt like he didn't, if only he knew what I went through for this coffee. I mean, come on, like, this is unreasonable. And then he brought up this whole thing, like, you haven't been calling me lately. And I couldn't take it anymore. You know, I said, you should be calling me. I'm the sick one here. Like, I'm the one who needs help, right? And, he kind of explained to me in a calm voice that if I want help, there's a solution for me here. And I heard that an awful lot. Like, I heard an awful lot of, like, we can help you if you want help, but we're not going to do it for you. A lot of stuff, like, you don't ever have to feel this way again, but you have to take some actions. And, I didn't get it. I didn't get it at that point. I'd been sober 2 weeks. My parents were out of town. I hadn't told a living soul what was really going on. And I went home that night, and I felt anxious. I just felt tight. And I remembered I had some of those tranquilizers still left. Never thought that was something to talk to my sponsor about. And so I thought, it says on the bottle, take as needed for anxiety. And I was anxious, man. Like, I needed one. I needed one that night. It had been 2 weeks without a drink. I didn't have any other answer working. And so I took one, and actually I took 3 because that was my normal dose. It said take 1, but I always take 3. And then I started feeling good, so I drank. I started drinking on top of that. And then, I guess I threw myself a little party. Like, my parents were out of town, no one was in the house. I took the rest of the tranquilizers, which was like, I actually remember there were 8 in the bottle, and I'd taken 3, and I took 4 more, and left 1 in the bottle with the conscious thought, like, if I were an alcoholic, I would have to take that pill. Like, no alcohol could leave that pill there, could leave something that's going to change my mood. And, I felt very self-satisfied, very proud of myself. And I woke up 4 days later in the cardiac care unit with, like, all these things all over me and charcoal coming out of my nose and, found out that I had been in a coma for 3 days, had overdosed on some other medicines. I'd gone into a blackout and taken, like, this whole prescription of something, which isn't even mood-altering, and I have no explanation for why I took it. But, that's where it took me. And, I came back. I remember when I got out of the hospital, it was like 3 days later, and it was the first day I'd started to feel better. Like, I was a big smoker at the time, and it was the first day I could smoke and not throw up right afterward. Like, a lot of the stuff had begun to process out of my system, I guess. And I couldn't sleep that night, which was a common problem for me. I could never sleep. Like, I was so used to drinking a little bit every night or doing something that I couldn't fall asleep on my own anymore. And so I thought, well, I'll celebrate tonight. I feel better tonight. And I remembered it talked about if you can drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to you. If you can take 1 drink and leave it alone, or stop abruptly and leave it alone, maybe you're not an alcoholic. Good for you. And so I thought, well, I'll give it a try. Maybe I'll learn something. And so I filled this iced tea bottle with brandy and drank the whole thing, thinking that's my one drink. really satisfied in it. And I see I've gone over. I don't know how I managed to do that. But people called me from the program and asked what had been going on. People explained to me that's not what it talks about. That's not what that experiment means. That's not normal drinking by any stretch of the imagination. And from that point on, I started doing what people advised me to do. And I got involved in sponsorship. I got involved in a home group. I started talking to my sponsor. And I didn't do anything on blind faith. Like, I was told to just do it, no matter what you think, and see what happens. And my sobriety, if nothing else, has been that. Like, I've done everything I've been asked to do, and the results have been good. The results have been way beyond anything I did on my own. And, you know, I got to make amends to my parents here. I got to go through the death of both my mom and my dad, and got to show up like a son for them. And, you know, I've gotten to do a lot of the things I dreamed of doing before I came here, and have really gotten relationships and a sense of peace and comfort going through the day. Like, a lot of stuff that if you'd asked me what I wanted when I got here, wasn't even on the list. Is the stuff that really, really makes me happiest today. And, you know, like I said at the beginning, I'm very grateful today that I can call myself an alcoholic, that I fit in here, that something works for me here. And anyhow, I'm sorry I talked way too long about my drinking, but I'm really glad to be here, and thanks for listening.